And on this Saturday morning, we join WSMI's Terry Tote.
Thank you very much, David Jenkins, and good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome to Sports Saturday. We've got a busy day today. We're going to be talking with Bob Allen, the head baseball coach of the Hillsboro Hilltoppers here a little bit later on this morning. We're also going to be talking with Carl Fesser, who was one of the officials at the IHSA Class 1A-2A State Basketball Tournament Championships in Peoria a couple weeks ago. And we have a chance to catch up with a friend who I hadn't talked to for a while, Roy Mulholland, who is now the head women's basketball coach at Greenville College. He used to be the head coach at Greenville High School, had some success there. But the Greenville College Lady Panthers are NCCAA national champions.
Congratulations to them.
Yeah, so we had a chance to catch up with Roy, and we'll do that in the second half of the program today. One thing that you and I probably, before we go any further, Dave, of course we've got Cardinals baseball today. This will be the last weekend of spring training games on the radio on AM 1540, FM 106.1 before we start in earnest a week from tomorrow night. But the announcement was Carlos Martinez is going to get to start against the Cubs. And I think we both agree that's probably a pretty good pick.
Yeah, it was the right call, and Adam Wainwright agreed with the call, too. He said it was the right decision. He said next year's decision is going to be tougher whenever they both finish in the top five in the Cy Young voting.
Yeah.
Or both have 20 wins, something like that, something along those lines.
Let's hope that's a problem that they have to deal with next year.
We'll see.
But, you know, certainly going in this year and with the and you know, towards the end of last year, Waino kind of got it together, but you certainly have to thank Martinez and watching him this spring.
I think he found his curveball over the offseason, too. He was playing catch, I think, in the backyard, and he found his grip after like a year and a half. And he told his wife, he was like, "I'm so excited. It's like home right now."
Yeah.
So that'll be nice to see, because he changed his mechanics a little bit at some point last year because his curveball, he just didn't have a good feel for it. So it was more of like a 1-7 rather than a 12-6.
Yeah. And it was kind of flat sometimes. Yeah. So and that's never a good move. Hanging curveballs tend to end up in the seats.
They do. So hopefully he'll have a bounce back year. He's going to be the number two starter heading into the season, and we'll see how the Cardinals have had a really good spring. I think they're up to, not that wins matter in spring training, but they're up to 17 wins this year. And they've played pretty well, and a lot of guys who are not going to make an immediate impact on the Major League roster have played well in Harrison Bader. Jose Martinez may end up throwing his name into consideration for the final outfield spot, the spring he's had.
I think, and if the Cardinals follow their usual path of, you know, lots of injuries, we're gonna see a lot of these guys, and hopefully they'll be able to deliver. And still, if you look at the Central Division, the Cubs are the team to beat.
Yeah.
The Cubs are the team to beat in baseball.
Yeah.
Let's just face it.
They are
the team to beat. So.
I think it's going to be interesting with that last outfield spot, because Jose Martinez has had such a great spring. Tommy Pham obviously has been injury prone in his career. Didn't have a great year last year. And then you've got Dexter Fowler as the starting center fielder. Plus you've got Randall Grichuk, who can play center field. So Jose Martinez, more of a corner outfield guy slash first baseman, career minor leaguer, but he's played really well. You wonder if maybe he gets the nod as the final outfielder over Tommy Pham, who I think may still have options. I don't know if he's still got options left or not, but if Pham does have options left, I wouldn't be surprised to see Martinez get the make the final roster spot.
It'd be interesting.
I think he's got four home runs this spring and is just tearing the cover off the ball.
And you mentioned Randall Grichuk. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy that, you know, could do some major damage if he could cut down on strikeouts. And,
yeah. Well, it sounds like they're just going to let him play.
Well, sometimes that's what you got to do.
Yeah, a lot of his approach last year where he struggled, they were wanting him to cut down on strikeouts and focus more on walks, and it really threw him off. And whenever they sent him down and told him, hey, just be yourself, he started hitting home runs again and started hitting again in general. So, I mean, strikeouts may just be a part of his game, and I mean, the hitting will come with it as well.
Yeah. Cardinals, Marlins today and tomorrow, 11:45 a.m., 1540 FM, 106.9. Then a week from tomorrow on the 2nd of April, Cards and Cubs open up the season. It's the Sunday night season opener, and we'll have the broadcast for you Been getting it, I think, 5:55 mm-hmm. on AM 1540, FM 106.9 with the Cards and Cubs.
Busy day in St. Louis that day. I'm going to the Blues game that afternoon.
Oh, yeah.
They moved it up to the afternoon game, probably because the Cardinals
were
named the night game. So it'll be a busy day in St. Louis.
Well, it's one of those great sports days in
St.
Louis. You know, that's terrific.
Maybe they'll have soccer games in the future on the same days as
well. Who knows? Yeah. It's a possibility, possibility. How are things going with our coveted WSMI Cup at this point here, Dave?
Pretty good.
Anybody in that actually works out here still in the running? Or
yeah, Kevin. Kevin is leading it. Kevin Talley is leading it right now. He's got a one-point lead. I don't have the standings in front of me, but okay. I know he's got a one-point lead. And he has Kansas winning it all.
Ooh.
So he's got a good chance. Yeah, he's got a really good chance. He's got, I believe his runner-up is out of it, but so are a lot of people's mm-hmm. at this point. He's got Kansas winning it all. I think he's got, I want to say, North Carolina as his other Final Four team that is alive.
Mm-hmm.
As far as other people who have Kansas winning it all, Linda Marty has Kansas winning it all, John Michael Marty's wife.
Mm-hmm.
But she has Kentucky as the other Final Four team. So really Kentucky-UNC matchup will decide who wins as far as that pool's concerned. There are other people who are still alive that don't have Kansas winning at all, but,
yeah.
I mean, Kansas looks really good right now.
And, you know, after seeing Kansas a couple times, I don't know if is there a more athletic team?
No, it doesn't look like it.
Man,
Kentucky's
pretty
good.
Put it this way, they're hot at the right time.
Yeah. It looks like Kansas and Kentucky look like the two best teams in the nation
yeah,
right now.
Yeah, they do. They really do.
And they're going to, if all goes according to plan, they're going to face each other in the semifinal.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Yesterday, North Carolina beat Butler 92-90. Kentucky beat UCLA 86-75. The last Big Ten team.
It was a heck of a game.
Loses in overtime. It was a heck of a game.
Yeah.
It was. Florida beat Wisconsin 84-83 in overtime. And South Carolina.
How about that? How about
South
the job Frank
Carolina.
Martin has done?
How about that? They beat Baylor 70-50. Coming up today in the NCAA tournament, as we go now from the Sweet 16 into the Elite Eight, Xavier versus Gonzaga. That'll be a 5:09 tip our time today. And then Oregon versus Kansas at 7:49. The tip for tonight. So
Gonzaga's never made a Final Four. They're going to have a good chance at doing it today.
How many years have they been around? And we've wondered, is this Gonzaga's year?
Yeah.
Are the Zags going to do it this year?
It's been about 20 years since they've really planted themselves as a power in college basketball. They've just never been able to get past the Elite Eight.
And they've got Xavier to deal with. So.
Yeah. I think they've only made it. Gonzaga, this is only like their third or fourth trip to the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
So, But, at the same time, Xavier is probably the hottest team in college basketball right now.
Wow.
Which I don't understand it because they went on a six-game losing streak towards the end of the season because one of their players was hurt.
It's March Madness.
It is.
It's just madness. There's the foul pole syndrome or whatever else you want to call it. March Madness is a good description for it.
Well, the madness perfectly sums up that East quadrant with Florida being the four seed, and they're now the best seed remaining in that mm-hmm. quadrant.
So.
Florida against South Carolina, which everyone obviously predicted to happen.
Yeah. We'll see. We're going to be talking with Bob Allen, the head coach of the Hilltoppers, as we mentioned, a little bit coming up after the break. About 10:30 this morning, we're going to talk with Carl Fesser, who was in one of the game officials at the state basketball tournament a couple weeks ago, and then Roy Mulholland from Greenville College. We need to get to our first break this morning. WSMI Sports Saturday rolls on right after these messages. Well, we have moved out of basketball. We have moved into baseball, and that's what Bob Allen has done. He is the head coach of the Hillsboro Hilltopper baseball team. And, Bob, I guess in spite of the fact that we've had some good weather, for the most part, getting into the springtime. It's still a little chilly in the spring, but it's good to be outdoors, isn't it?
Oh, it's great to be outdoors. I mean, we've already got four games in, and, you know, it gives us a good idea of what's going on.
And these early games, you do a lot more than play baseball. You do a lot of scouting of your own team, don't you, to learn their strengths and their weaknesses?
Oh, yeah. I've already played 15 different people in a varsity game already this year, trying to figure out what we have, what we don't have, and with the pitch count rule, trying to figure out who can throw the ball and who can't.
Talk to me a little bit about the pitch count rule. Explain to me what that is.
This year, the IHSA has enacted a pitch count rule, which for varsity-wise allows a varsity pitcher to throw a maximum of 105 pitches in a game period, no matter what. And then there's various pitches up to certain numbers below that, and then they use a chart to tell you how many days of rest that pitcher has to have before he or he can pitch again. So
they're just trying to keep an eye on the kids and make sure that kids' arms aren't overused, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I think it's a great idea. I do believe especially for maybe smaller 1A schools, it might put them in kind of a bind. But it's just one of those things. Too many of these travel teams and everything else, and kids are playing baseball year round, and they're overusing their arms.
You know, and that's what I thought, Bob. That you get down to the end of the season, and you know you have rainouts, and then all of a sudden you're trying to make up conference games, and you have a few days off scheduled near the end of the season. All of a sudden, those days are packed with ball games. You run out of pitching pretty quick.
Oh yeah, especially if you don't have the horses to do it. You know, for the larger 3A, 4A schools, I'm sure it won't be much of a problem. But for the smaller schools, I can see it being a problem if you don't have the numbers in your program. We're blessed this year to have about 11 different guys that have a varsity uniform that actually have pitched in the past or were pitchers, you know, at the junior high level or on their travel team. So we have 11 different varsity guys that can pitch, and that's going to keep us in good shape throughout the season, even when we have back-to-back games and doubleheaders and such like that. But I can see it being a problem for smaller teams, even to the point where they may have to cancel games just because they've run out of pitching.
My goodness, 11 guys that could pitch, that's unheard of practically in a Class 2A school. Wow.
Yeah, we were blessed with a very good freshman class, and we got a lot of freshmen that can throw a little bit. And then Brad Tomazzoli and Kyle Kuiper and Brock Boston left last year. All three of those guys pitched, but we returned everybody else that pitched after that. And so, you know, we've got plenty of guys that can throw. It's just how well they throw is another story.
Well, not walking people is the name of the game when it comes to pitching. That's, you know, boils down to that.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. No kidding.
Don't give any free passes. Tell me a little bit about the South Central Conference this year. I assume Greenville's kind of in the mix of things. Southwestern obviously would have to be in there. I think Vandalia's probably got some kids coming back, could have a pretty good year.
I mean, the way I see it, Greenville and Southwestern are always the teams to go through until they prove they aren't. And Brian Hanslow does a great job over there at Piasaw, and Todd Hutchison does such a great job down at Greenville that they're going to be competitive every year. And to have the good athletes to boot, it's one of those things. I know Greenville's got some really good pitching and some real good position players. And Piasaw has Colin Bumgardner, you know, at the top of their staff, and he can pitch with anybody in the state. So that really helps them. Vandalia's got a couple really good players, especially with the Well kid. And after that, honestly, I think Carlinville should be pretty decent with the young Dixon boy coming back and pitching, and the Hannig boy that shut us down in regionals last year. So we'll have to see how it all plays out. And we were 5-4 in conference last year, and hopefully we can make up a couple of those games and be 7-2 or better this year.
And what a lot of people don't understand, Bob, is that baseball is such a goofy game because, I mean, if your pitcher can't hit the outside corner when they normally can, it's a long game, you know.
No, exactly. I mean, baseball, the funny thing about baseball is you could play your best game of the year and still lose 1-0. I mean, it's just one of those things that can happen. Baseball, there's never really a sure winner or a sure loser until the bottom of the seventh inning. So it's crazy.
Do you also have a chance to play some JV scheduled games?
Yeah, we have 24 JV scheduled games. So we have 22 guys on our roster this year, and we want to try to get as much playing time for the younger guys as we can. So we have 24 scheduled games, and we'll pick up a game here and there besides that. So they get plenty of playing time and plenty of reps going into their sophomore and junior years.
So, Bob, when it comes down to this season and you look ahead, do you kind of have an idea where you want to be as far as a record is concerned, or you know, heading in towards, you know, the end of the season?
Well, our main goal this year is to build off last year. We won 13 games last year. We'd like to at least win a game in the postseason this year, something we didn't do last year. We'd like to win a couple more conference games than we did last year. It's just, as long as our pitching holds up, I think we should be fine. We've got some very, very good offensive players. Through four games in the season, we're hitting .369 as a team. So, we're definitely hitting the ball. We just got to hope that our pitching holds up. And if that's the case, you know, win more than 13 ball games and advance a little further in the postseason is what we're looking at as a goal this season. And then, on down the road, you know, just keep building on that to where, you know, hopefully someday in the future we're talked in the same breath as in the South Central Conference as Southwestern and Greenville are.
Yeah. This early in the season, is the offense ahead of the pitching or vice versa?
Oh, I think always the offense is going to be ahead of the pitching, especially when you start so early in the spring. My first couple starts, I let my guys start. I only have them throw 75 pitches anyway, so it's not like they're going to be out there for a really long time. And, you know, for us, I would have to say definitely the offense is ahead of the pitching. But, you know, we did a good job of winning three of our first four games, especially since they were four games in 5 days. And kind of the Saturday against Auburn, we kind of ran low on pitching as far as relief pitching was concerned, and that kind of hurt us a little bit. But that's going to happen a couple times during the season with the pitch count rules the way they are.
And, Bob, I noticed on the Hilltopper schedule, you've got Altamont, you got Mater Dei, you got Nashville on the schedule. Those are teams that are generally, you know, pretty good.
Right. One of the things when I was told that I was going to get the job last year was I wanted to beef up the schedule and play the Carrolltons and the Nashvilles and teams like that that I know have good basketball reputation, or sorry, wrong sport, baseball reputation.
Yeah. And they do have good basketball reputations too. Yeah.
Yeah, they have those too. Yeah, yeah. And, I also would like, to get teams on the schedule that are out of the area and teams we wouldn't normally play. Like, we're going all the way down to Edwards County at the end of the season to play Albion in a game, and I think it's good for the kids to see different talent and see what else is out there and see how we fare.
And it doesn't hurt either to travel to go to a game, because in the postseason now with these sub-sectionals, a lot of times there's a little more travel involved.
Oh, exactly. That's you never know where you're going to go when the IHSA gets involved. So. I experienced that a lot over in Litchfield. So.
Yes, the geography has a whole new meaning when it comes to postseason, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
So, all in all, I think you're looking at a pretty good season here for the Hilltoppers. Is that correct then, from my standpoint here, Bob? Looks like you guys might have a pretty good season.
Yeah, we have pretty high hopes. We're rather young. I mean, we only have two seniors. The five guys that I'm going to throw out there are starting pitchers. I have, two juniors, a sophomore, and two freshmen. So, they'll get experience as it goes. And, I got a lot of freshman pitchers pitching out of the bullpen. So, you know, hopefully as the season wears on, they won't be so nervous when they step out there. And, our youth and inexperience may hurt us in some games, but I think as we move down the road, it's going to be an asset more than it is, you know, against us.
Bob, before we let you go here, back to the pitching rule again, and I guess somebody has to keep track of these pitches. How does that work for high school teams?
Well, after each game, we go into the IHSA website, and there's a pitch count tracker there, and we already have loaded all the people that pitch for us into the tracker, and then we just put their number of pitchers down, whether it's a varsity game, JV game. Everybody that throws a pitch has to be put into that tracker. And then it automatically comes up how much rest that person needs and how many pitches they can throw the next time out when their rest is done. So that saves us a lot of worry of trying to figure that out with our heads. But so it was really cool setup the way the IHSA did it. It's just a matter of making sure you remember to go in and put all your pitch counts in.
So there's no ambiguity there. They tell you exactly when the kid can pitch next. That's it.
Right. Yeah. And the nice thing is you can see all the other high schools throughout the state, too, and see who has to rest for them, too. So you can look at an upcoming opponent and go, well, we're probably not going to see him because he has to rest, so we'll probably be looking at this guy instead.
Which is something that a lot of coaches have never had a chance to do at the high school level in the past.
Oh, no, never. I mean, that's if there's any positive thing about the pitch count rule of saving arms, too, there's the fact that you can look at, you know, who you may be looking at as far as an upcoming opponent as far as pitching. So that helps a lot.
Well, Bob, we look forward to seeing the Hilltoppers this year, and we hope you have a great season, and we appreciate you joining us here on Sports Saturday. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you, Terry.
I tell you what, the Hilltoppers, you know, are a team that's up and coming, and if everybody can stay healthy, I think they're in for a pretty darn good season here.
I would agree with that.
And that South Central Conference is going to be the top half of the conference is going to be an absolute slugfest, I think.
Yeah. And it is really neat how the IHSA is what they're doing with their website and keeping track. Is that, I'm sure that was a concern amongst a lot of head coaches about how they were going to keep track and forgetting and whatnot.
And I haven't talked to anybody from the IHSA, but don't you think somebody said, okay, if we're going to implement this, we've got to have a way to keep track of it.
Right.
And until they figure that out, you really couldn't implement it. And probably somebody else, some other state has already done this sort of thing.
Right.
And so they probably modeled it off of that.
If you're going to make this rule, you can't expect them to keep track of all this, too.
I am interested to see how this is going to affect the teams heading down the stretch, though. Where we have off days. And, you know, you end up plugging in makeup games, especially conference games, late in the season, and see how that affects the pitching rotations of these teams. So.
Yeah.
And it will.
It will.
It will.
It will
definitely affect them. So.
I would also like to know if someone breaks the rule, what happens? Because you know it's going to happen.
Well.
Because there are going to be some of these coaches with perhaps an old-school mindset who say, well, I don't care.
Well, what happens if you don't load up the information, you know?
Well, yeah.
That's
another good question.
Yeah. So that's a question for us not to worry about.
Yeah. We'll find out.
That's right. Coming up in just a moment or two, we're going to be talking with our good friend Carl Fesser, who is a IHSA state tournament official. We'll get to that coming up right after these messages.
9:31 on this Saturday morning, and back to Sports Saturday, and we join WSMI's Terry Tote.
Thank you, David Jenkins, and welcome to Sports Saturday. We are pleased to have you, and we are pleased to bring in our good friend Carl Fesser. Carl Ray, good morning.
Morning, Doug. How are you this morning?
We're doing just terrific. I tell you what, not only were you part of the state tournament, but Central Illinois had a good representation with Aaron Lane and the Cuffle Boys.
Oh, yes. It was a little family affair. I don't know if you know this, but my wife and the Cuffles are first cousins. I get to spend Christmas and Thanksgiving with them, so it was really a neat thing to be up there with them.
And you had
on
to,
that.
You have to put your boots on because the stories get pretty deep at that point.
You're exactly right. I'll agree between the golf, the watering hole stories, and the quail hunting stories. It does get pretty deep, Terry. I'll agree 100% on that.
The one thing that I am pleased to say is that our guys from the central part of the state, including you, did a terrific job of officiating at the state tournament level, Carl. You did a great job.
Well, thank you much, Terry. And you know what? It boils down to the kids made it easy for us up there. And we all got along great. I mean, coaches were tremendous. They worked with us well. And Kurt Gibson and Gary Gustafson, I mean, they had us prepared pretty well. And, I mean, we did a pregame meeting Thursday night after the banquet. And then Friday morning we got to go down and dress in Bradley's locker room, which was a neat thing. I'd never been in something like that. Gary did a really great pregame with us, and we just let the kids play and had a lot of fun.
Connor, what sort of pregame information do you get from the IHSA before you hit the floor?
Well, they just kind of talk to us on staying in our area. I don't know if you've had, we've talked certain things. When you're lead, you got a certain area you watch, and when you're C, you have certain places you watch, and they just tell you to make sure you trust your partners because we are working with different partners. And I got to give a kudos to my partners, Tom Conklin from Farmington and the Buzz Man, Buzzy Barton from Springfield. Just really nice gentlemen I got to meet and had a lot of fun with calling. We started the sectional at Brown County, and I started working with them. And I went to Normald and did the super, and then we got to call ball up the state tournament, and that was all our first trip. So that was something neat.
And of course, generally, you get three trips is the maximum number of trips you get to make to state. So hopefully you'll be making some return trips then to the state tournament.
Well, I do know, Terry, they are changing that a little bit.
Are they?
There's some guys that get, and a lot of times they're trying to get some guys through. Because everybody deserves to go to the state tournament. I mean, it's just a tremendous thing to get to go work, and I'm very honored that I got to go up there and work it. I mean, and every official that works like we do needs to have that, to go up there and experience what happens up there. Because it's just really hard to describe, Terry, it's just such an honor that I got to do it is a big thing.
First off, you know, the High School Association, and let's face it, the IHSA takes a lot of dings sometimes from people, but they do the state basketball tournament very, very, very well. And you know, that's kind of the showcase event, as far as I'm concerned, of the High School Association, when they put that state tournament on. And in order to get, you know, and you talk about being honored, but, you know, you earn the right to get to that point and to be recognized, to be valuable and respected enough to get called up to do that game.
Yeah, that is true. And, Terry, I'll agree with you 100%. I know Mike Wiley was up there. He's also from Springfield, and he'd done a football championship. And I listened to Rick. Rick's been up there and done football championship, and they said the basketball is altogether different. You just, in football, you go up there, call your game, and you leave. In basketball, we go up on Thursday night, come home Sunday morning, and you get just, I mean, you meet different officials. I met Larry. I can't remember Larry's last name, but he was from south of Carbondale, and I would have never met Larry ever if I wouldn't have been with him at the state tournament. I mean, there's, and just tremendous guys, Terry. It's just hard to put words behind it. It's just one of them things that's very, very neat. I will say that.
And Carl, you mentioned that the partners that you had at the state, you worked with in the sectional, super sectional. Were you discussing the appearance at state prior to that, when you guys were preparing for your other games, or did you just kind of force it out of your mind and say, okay, let's take care of tonight's game?
Well, that's one thing you do have to do. Terry, I got to find out. I was on my way to Brown County, which is Mount Sterling, and I'm driving up there, and my phone starts going off, and my good buddies Dan and Smith and Rick Cole, they were making sure, they were checking the computer for me, and Smitty said, hey, state finals out, and about a minute later, my phone rings. Rick knew I was driving, so he called me, and he said, hey, state tournament's out. I'm not gonna say anything. You just go look. And he said, by the way, enjoy it. So at that point in time, I kind of felt that I was going to state tournament. So we got up there to sectionals, and we all got there. And it just so happens, I don't know, Sam Knox, who's just newly hired at the IHSA, he was a real good buddy of Tom. And Sam walked in and congratulated. He was in the locker room with us. And it was really neat. I mean, the IHSA there, with Sam being there watching, I mean, Kurt was watching, said Normal. And then we were under a little bit of a microscope at the state tournament. So they all kind of know what we're doing. And it's really neat. I mean, just having everybody there and the congratulations that I got to experience.
Yeah, and it's well deserved, Carl, because you've been one of the better officials around here for several years, I thought, and I think it was certainly your time had come, and if, in fact, I thought it was long overdue, to be honest with you. But tell me what it's like when you actually get to step out there on the floor, and you know the public address announcer is introducing the teams, and you know they come by and they kind of give you the you know the fist knock and everything, and just prior to the game, do the officials have butterflies like the kids do?
Oh, I did. I do know that because I remember. We were just getting ready, my first game, which was Friday night. It was late game Friday night.
Yep.
And Gary Gustafson said, "Fesser, they can't put a needle up your tail." And I said, "You're exactly right, Gary. I've been and watched. Dad had drugged me to Charleston to Super Sectionals, and I'd watched basketball, and I drove different places. I can throw out numerous games where I went and watched and really enjoyed it, and then to actually be a part of it. It was a neat thing. I mean, that's one thing. And just to have the guys that were working with us and everybody, I mean, I didn't come off one time, Terry, where there wasn't other officials talking to us about the game. I mean, you did a good job, and I did it a couple times. I know the couples had a tough game in their 1A championship, went overtime. I mean, it was just a tough game to call for them. And I made sure I didn't even get to watch the end of their game because I was down in the locker room being there to support them.
Yeah.
I mean, and everything. And and they got the call with Carl Ripken, which I'd worked with the King. I won't tell you another nickname I got for him, but that's a story I'll tell you personally.
Okay.
It's a good story, but it's not fit for radio listening, I don't believe.
For the family hour, huh?
Yeah, exactly right. Hey, I do want to mention family. I want to give a big thank you to my wife, Jane, and my kids. They supported me through all this, and they were there for me.
It's one of the neatest things. And Carl, we've seen this from a standpoint of local teams going to a state tournament and how the interest is generated in our small communities. And, you know, 1A and 2A, so different from 3A and 4A, generally, as far as crowds are concerned and the level of commitment to from the fan base, I think. I think when we see our local guys like you advancing to the state tournament, we have a sense of pride as well, when you get to make these appearances.
Yeah, I mean, and getting to go, Terry, with all the guys from around here was really neat. I mean, as we talked about, and I know there was talk about it, there was nobody in the 1A, 2A, was the furthest north was Tom, and he's about, I think he said about a half hour from Peoria, and not having any Chicago guys up there, there was a little talk about that, and some of them schools were a little unhappy that they didn't have some of their local officials up there. But I think there's more 3A, 4A association there, Terry,
when
the guys from Chicago. And they should be. I mean, it's just a little different level of play, in my opinion, when you start working them northern teams. They jump well. They're quicker. Not taking nothing away from downstate basketball, but you get up working Chicago teams, which I was fortunate to – work two Chicago teams wise up there, and it's just a little different than we are.
It really is different. The speed and just sometimes the different skills. It's not necessarily the skill level, but just the different types of skills that you see with teams out of the Chicago, especially the public league. So it's a whole different ball game. So, Carl, and we're just so pleased, and we know you had a great time. And this is one of those once in a lifetime kind of things, or hopefully be more than once in a lifetime, but one of those experiences that you just cherish because you put a heck of a lot of work in. You've been out there for years doing these things, these ball games, and you finally get rewarded, and like I said, it's the crown jewel of the state tournaments as far as the IHSA is concerned. Nothing tops the basketball tournament. It's probably the best state basketball tournament in the country, I think. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, they do it upright.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd like to, if there's a different state tournament that does as well as Illinois, I'd like to go and watch it. Just to say that I, and the only one I could think of that might be very comparable would be Indiana. I mean, I know there's some smaller schools over there that they play a lot of basketball over there. I mean, just about as much as we do in Illinois, but we are the original March Madness.
That's right.
And that's a neat thing. And hey, by the way, I'm going to change who you liking in college there, Terry, to win the show.
Carl, I'm telling you, man, right now I think Kansas is the team you got to beat because I think they are the hot team. I think they are the most athletically gifted team right now. And I, even if they aren't the most athletically gifted team, they just seem to be clicking. I know they have a great chokeability factor, but boy, I sure like Kansas.
Yeah, they got good guard play.
Yeah, they do. And you know, give me guards.
Oh, yeah, you're exactly right. We've had discussions.
Yeah.
Or that nowadays that guard play is huge.
You got that 3-point line out there, man. Give me guards.
Yeah, I agree. But I tell you what, up at state, I sit and watch the 6'8 kids soar up from three and did it pretty consistently.
Yeah.
And so, but that's when you get to that level, that kid from Mount Carmel, he could shoot the tray and handle a ball, so I'm sure he's looking at the next level and everything.
Yep.
Hey, I got one more thank you. I know my CPS crew, they've been behind me on this and backing me and let me go from work early, and really do appreciate it. And another, to you guys at WSMI, I mean, you guys have supported me and talked me up good, and I got to give a little shout to Tim Mice. He's the one that I'm kind of blaming that I got to go to the state tournament. He said it one of the times I listened to him after I got off the air, and he was told me that I hadn't been in the state tournament, and by golly, I got to go this year. So I think Tim had something to do with it. And you know what, Terry? He wasn't with me, but I had one guy that we made the state tournament.
Yeah. I know, buddy. I know, buddy. I know your former partner. Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. So
we've wanted to do it for a long time, T, and we finally made it.
I know, buddy. That's Danny. Yeah, I know. So that's you made it. You made it.
Yep.
You made us all
that's
proud.
Right.
Congratulations.
Yep. All right. Thank you, Terry. I appreciate it.
Hey, take care, my friend. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy college basketball.
Oh no, we're planting garden today.
Oh, okay.
If it don't rain.
Thanks, Carl.
Thank you, Carl. I appreciate it.
State tournament basketball official Carl Ray Fesser, our special Fillmore correspondent, and he really did do a good job. In fact, all of our guys from the central part of the state did a terrific job. You mentioned the couple boys in that 1A state championship game. That was an overtime game. They did a terrific job of letting the kids decide the ball game, and that's what it's all about.
And
so
you could hear the authenticity
yes.
and the emotions he was feeling.
Yes. Yeah. Carl's a good guy.
Oh,
good guy.
Absolutely.
Tell you what, when you get those guys, you know, on a crew, you know, you're going to have a good job.
That's right.
You're going to have a good game. So
that's right.
We're going to talk with Roy Mulholland, the head basketball coach of the Greenville Panther women's basketball team. They are national champions. We'll get to that right after these messages.
We're joined on WSMI Sports Saturday by Roy Mulholland, who is the head coach of the Panthers women's basketball team at Greenville College. And Roy, you did something that's never been done before as far as the Panther basketball team is concerned, and just recently crowned national champions. What a terrific honor and what a terrific season it's been.
It really was. It was a fantastic season even before the tournament. Just great kids working hard, doing it together. But to have the chance to go to the NCCAA national tournament, to get invited to the regional, win the regional, and then go to the national tournament was just really a bonus for us. And that's kind of how we looked at it. We had no pressure, and we got a chance to go play three more basketball games together, and our kids just really embraced it, and we went after it and really didn't go expecting to win the national championship, but what a great outcome, and our kids played great.
Roy, before we go any further, let's explain a little bit about the NCCAA versus the NCAA and what that all means.
Yep. So we are part of the NCAA Division III, which is what everybody knows. That's what they're watching the March Madness on TV, the NCAA Division I. There's Division II. Division III is non-scholarship, and so we're a Division III institution. and we play in the SLIAC conference, all Division III teams. And then we're also part of the NCCAA, which is the National Christian College Athletic Association. So Christian colleges from all over the country are part of this organization, and it's made up of NCAA two teams, NAIA one, NAIA two, NCAA three. So it's really a lot of diversity in terms of scholarship schools, non-scholarship schools, level of play. And then it's one of the reasons why it makes it a little tough and why us winning a national championship is a little bit improbable, and that is we had to beat two NCAA two teams in order to win the championship, and it doesn't happen often, that's for sure.
As you approached the tournament, I guess, well, first and foremost, you have to have some terrific athletes, which you obviously had, but you have to get hot at the right time as far as the team is concerned, and that obviously happened.
Yeah, and no doubt. We have some really skilled players for a Division III team. We got good size, so we have post play, which is usually not as true about Division III teams, a little harder to get post kids. But we got good size. We kind of have an inside-outside game, and our kids are able to do, you know, kind of a little bit of everything, and then we really did. We peaked at the right time, and that's the second year in a row. Last year, at the end of the year, we peaked at the right time and went to the NCAA Division III tournament. And we put together a string of five games where we just played outstanding basketball. I can't remember a series of five games in my coaching career where we have played consistently at such a high level. Like in the last 3 weeks, the light bulb turned a shade brighter for everybody on our team all the way through, and everybody just really matured on the floor.
And there's really no, I guess, surefire explanation on why that happens at a certain time. It just happened, and you roll with the punches and see how far it can take you.
Yeah, there you are absolutely right. I said to our coaches, let's try to analyze and figure out whatever that was, because let's bottle it and use it over and over and over again. And there's this, no such thing. A lot of it has to do with the kids, their willingness to buy in. You know, we talk a lot in sport about, you know, working hard, team chemistry, kids doing their roles and getting along with each other. And in this case, most definitely, that was what got us to this point. We were not the most talented team at the national tournament, but we were the most together team. We had the best team chemistry. We had a lot of kids contributing, and we just ended up to be the best team, not the most talented team.
And you know, and you see that at every level, Roy, whether it's the NCAA Division I, high school in particular, I think. A lot of times you see great athletic teams, but you have a team that plays better as a team, ends up winning the whole thing.
Yeah, no doubt. And again, we talk about it a lot. We preach it a lot. Sometimes we don't always necessarily coach in that direction. You know, so it's kind of one of those things we believe. But it's difficult because you have to make some difficult choices along the way, maybe even sometimes to some of your more talented players to rein them in, to get them to play team, to get them to think about everybody else. And it's not easy. It's a little bit counterculture to what's happening out there in sport with the ESPN highlights and all of that. And so you have to have a whole group of kids buy into the same mission, buy into what we're trying to accomplish together, that their role is important. And when it happens, it is just an amazing thing to watch and see. And that was the year we experienced this year all the way along.
No one can, I think, accurately put into words what it means to walk into a gymnasium and be absolutely thrilled about being in a gymnasium. Even before anybody gets there, you're just thrilled to be there. Plus, you know that the kids are coming in. You're going to be able to run practice. It's going to be the site of a game. It's just a magical thing. I guess that's why, you know, if it was easy, everybody could do it. And it's not easy. And that's why people like you are successful coaching.
Well, I've said this before, but I this is finishing year number 32, and I still get excited every day to walk in the door onto the floor and be able to practice and work with kids. And the kids are what make it all worthwhile. I mean, the wins, that's what we're trying to do. But it's the kids along the way that you build relationships with, that you watch grow and develop, develop lifelong friends, all of those things. The two best moments for me at the national tournament when we won was watching our kids celebrate. And just watching them smile and hug each other and hug their parents. And I've been through it a little bit, so I just kind of stood back, and my enjoyment comes from watching them. And then the other best moment, to be honest with you, was just being able to hug my wife. My wife is behind the scenes. She's not out front, but for 32 years, she's been there every day all along the way supporting me. And to be able to share that with her was just really a special moment for me. So those two things really made this just a phenomenal experience.
Well, one thing I can tell you about teams that you coach, Roy, is that you learn to play defense. And I take this all the way back to when you were at Greenville High School. You had some terrific teams there. And actually, in a span of, 4 years, I think you made 3 trips to the state tournament quarterfinal round. But you play great defense. And that's something that's hard to get through to kids sometimes.
Yeah, and it really, I mean, at least we hope it has been a hallmark of our program. Interestingly enough, this was just a phenomenal offensive team. They could score, but partway through the year, we hit a little bit of a bump, and we pulled them in, and we said, ladies, we're going to win a few games with offense, but unless we really begin to get tough on the defensive end of the floor, we are not going to be a championship team. And they took that to heart, and I'll tell you what, down the stretch, we were just really stingy defensively, did not give up many second-chance points, went to the boards hard, and when your kids are doing that, and then you have the ability to score at the other end of the floor, you're pretty tough for teams to have to match up against.
So, right. How do you enjoy the aspect of recruiting?
I really kind of enjoy it because it's relationship building. I mean, so there are obviously parts that are difficult. It's kind of 24/7, 365, and we're really trying to find kids that are more than just, you know, ball players on the floor. We're trying to find fits for our Christian environment. We're trying to find kids who can get it done in the classroom. And, you know, one of the things we say to the recruits that come to Greenville, if you're only competitive on the basketball floor, you are not competitive enough for us because you got to compete in all those other areas of your life just as hard. And if that's the kind of competitor you are, we'll take a look and consider bringing you in to join us. And then also we just have a responsibility to our kids that are here to bring in other just outstanding kids. We really want to recruit the intangibles. We can help you work with a team. We get 10 kids to score. I can help you become a better shooter, but you got to have the intangibles because that's that team chemistry, team selfishness piece that gets us over the top and helps us win a championship.
So I guess you were the subject of a little bit of talk once you capture that national championship, a little bit of a buzz around campus, I suppose.
Yeah, there is. I didn't get much work done the last 2 days. Everybody wanted to stop in and say congratulations and talk about it and hear the stories. And that's great because we want to do it for us, but it's not just our team. It's our campus. It's our community. I hope the community of Greenville and the people around feel a little piece of that and attachment to that, especially people who have come out and supported us.
And by the way, you can hear more of our interview with Roy Mulholland, the head coach of the Greenville women's basketball team, on our website. We've got the entire podcast, the entire interview as a podcast on our website, WSMIRadio.com. And by the way, in our conversation with Carl Fesser, I alluded to the fact that we were thinking about Danny Clavin. Yes, we were, but it's actually Eric Clavin who I was wanting to refer to. Just old age sometimes, and the mind just isn't what it used to be. But anyway, thanks to Carl Fesser, to Bob Allen, and to Roy Mulholland joining us on Sports Saturday here on WSMI-FM, Litchfield, Hillsboro, Cartlandville, and Greenville. Your 50,000-watt sports voice in Mid-Illinois Cardinals baseball, 11:45 today and tomorrow on AM 1540 and FM 106.9.